tech, cars, machines. Subscribe here or at gtkpartners.com.
Welcome, 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 everyone, to this episode of Tech, Cars, Machines. We've had one or two episodes touching directly on hydrogen. We've had several where we had the major OEMs in the trucking world talk to you about the utility of hydrogen in what they're doing to bring around a sustainable future. And you've probably heard a lot about how much the U.S. government is spending to make hydrogen part of the solution for stopping the earth from getting too hot and boiling us all away. My guest today represents about a little over $1 billion of the spending that the federal government is doing in its effort to promote hydrogen. And his name is Neil Bonwert, and he's the Chief Integration Officer at Mach 2. And I'm going to leave that as an acronym. Welcome, Neil, and have him explain what the acronym stands for. Give us the elevator pitch on Mach 2. Neil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about clean hydrogen and to talk about Mach 2, or the Midwest Alliance for Clean Hydrogen. That's the spelled out version of the acronym Mach 2.
Excellent. Excellent. And just very briefly, in a sentence or two, and we'll come back obviously to it in much greater detail, what is Mach 2 up to?
Yeah, no. So Mach 2 is a clean hydrogen hub. And so Mach 2 proposes to show the entire hydrogen value chain, from the production, the transportation and storage, to the end use of clean hydrogen, and clean hydrogen specifically in the Midwestern region of the United States. We're really capturing a three-state region initially of Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. And then we hope to expand the reach of Mach 2 to link up with other hydrogen hubs throughout the country to really create a true hydrogen network and economy in the United States.
Neil, where are you calling us from right now? Where are you based?
Yeah, so I'm based in Indianapolis, Indiana, so right in the center of the state of Indiana. And I work for Energy Systems Network. We're a non-for-profit, but Mach 2 is the overarching organization, you know, who is going to receive these DOE funding and administer these funds in different projects around, I guess, as I said, the three-state region of Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan.
You're a local, right? You're not an import. Seems like you grew up there. Tell me about yourself a little bit.
Sure. I was born actually across the state line. I was born in Champaign, Illinois, so home of the University of Illinois. My father was actually a professor at the University of Illinois. So, you know, sort of by default, I attended the University of Illinois and started my career actually in Illinois, working for a number of different companies. I majored actually, of all things, finance as an undergraduate. And so I worked directly in the investment industry for several years. Pursued the CFA charter, and I'm a CFA charter holder, and worked on investing, you know, capital in various ways, equities, and actually got into fixed income investing, and did that for a number of years, and then decided I actually wanted to work in industry. I moved across the state line many years ago, became a resident of Indiana, and I worked for Cummins or CMI for a decade or so here in the state of Indiana. You know, worked on a number of different initiatives at Cummins, including work in what's called the New Power Division or the Accelera Division at Cummins. And so while Cummins historically has focused more on the traditional combustion engines and primarily the diesel engines, you know, Cummins is looking at the future and beyond the internal combustion diesel engine and looking to battery electric technology and looking at hydrogen fuel cell technology. And so that's really, Ali, where I got my first exposure to hydrogen was at Cummins.
Right. Did you work with Amy Davis at Cummins by any chance?
Sure did. So initially, I worked in sort of the corporate treasury, corporate finance area. Then I worked in sort of the strategy area, and in particular, an area called the growth office. I worked in that office for a number of years, and then I worked in the New Power or the Accelera division. And yes, Amy is the president of that division, so worked closely with Amy and her staff.
Well, we have a three-way connection here. One is, this is our second episode in a row of a resident of the Hoosier State. The prior one, obviously, with Paul Mitchell, who actually is an organization you're involved with currently, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And then Amy Davis was one of our guests. boy, it's probably 2 years ago now. She was very kind to spend a bunch of time on us, and our listeners can go back and get a really good sense for, again, the portfolio of technologies and offerings and solutions that she's working on, in the same way that Mach 2, that we'll talk about a little bit more, is part of a large portfolio of solutions. Tell us a little bit about Energy Systems Network that you're part of right now.
Sure. No, thanks. So Energy Systems Network, it's a nonprofit organization headquartered right here in Indianapolis, Indiana. Our founder and CEO president is Paul Mitchell. Paul spent several years prior to ESN as part of the Mitch Daniels administration. And then late in the Daniels administration, Paul formed ESN or Energy Systems Network. And I think that was 13, maybe even 14 years ago. ESN has worked on a number of projects over the years. And I know Paul, you know, probably touched on those when you spoke to him. But I joined ESN a little bit over a year ago to really help pursue this federal funding opportunity, specifically with respect to the hydrogen hubs. And so, again, ESN has been around for a long time, has a good track record, a history of success. And this hydrogen hub program is just one more program that we're working to help foster in our state and really across the Midwest.
Gotcha. And my understanding is that, you know, clearly the federal government has many investments in sustainable energies, about $25 billion of it through the infrastructure legislation and the Inflation Reduction Act are being dispensed through the Department of Energy and specifically the Office of Clean Energy Demonstrations. And of that $25 billion, about a fourth of it is for the hubs. Neil, did I get that right? Correct what you need to, and also take the thread from there, please, and start telling us about how you came to apply for a portion of that, your $7
billion. Right. So the numbers are roughly correct. So actually, as part of the bipartisan infrastructure bill or the bipartisan infrastructure law, there is funding available, and it's around $8 billion total for the establishment of these so-called hydrogen hubs. And so an application window opened, and so companies, public partnerships were eligible to submit an application into the Department of Energy. But to your point, this program is administered by the Office of Clean Energy Demonstration, or OCED, inside the DOE. So the application window opened, and this was a very popular program. Initially, Ali, there were 79 concept papers that were submitted to the DOE. So 79 different, you know, organizations, entities raised their hand and said, you know, we'd like to be a part of this hydrogen hub program. Right up front, the DOE had basically said that there would be between 6 and 10. So 6 at the low end, 10 at the high end hubs who would ultimately receive an award. Clearly, the competition was pretty stiff. There were 79 concept papers that were submitted. And then the DOE read through the concept papers and down selected to 33. So of the 79, 33 were then given the encouragement to proceed with the full application. Initially, ESN, the state of Indiana, some Indiana companies had submitted our own application. We received affirmation from the Department of Energy that we can go ahead and proceed with the application, the full application. However, the Department of Energy also suggested that hubs in geographically adjacent regions should consider combining forces. And so again, of those 33, only 6 to 10 could ultimately receive the award. And so we started discussing, you know, a potential combination or merger with neighboring hydrogen hubs. Ultimately, our hub in Indiana merged with the hydrogen hub that was really led out of the state of Illinois called Mach 2. And so we combined forces. So then we became one, essentially one hub covering this three-state region of Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. And then that was the entity, Mach 2, who ultimately submitted the full application. So we went through the process of submitting the full application. And this is a quite a rigorous process. I think we submitted on Mach 2 around 1,000 pages of of documents, you know, really laying out our plan for, as I said at the onset, the production of the molecules, transportation, delivery, and then the end use of the molecules. So we really painted that picture. And then ultimately, the DOE took our full application along with 32 others, read through those applications, and invited, down selected certain of those to in-person interviews at the Department of Energy in August of 2023. And so Mach2 was fortunate enough to be one of the finalists who were asked to go to the Department of Energy for in-person interviews. And so we did that. And so I was on the team who went to the DOE in early August of 2023 and really had a full day of interviews with the OSID team. It was a very, very good experience. Was really impressed with the level of questions, the details really that the OSID asked us in our interviews, and really wanting to ensure that our hub would be successful. So that was in August of 2023. It took a couple months, but then on Friday, October 13th, Joseph Biden, President Biden, announced that there were 7 hubs that had been selected to enter into negotiations with the Department of Energy. And fortunate for us, Mach2 was one of the 7 hydrogen hubs which was selected. So, you know, we're very, very pleased to be one of just, you know, 7 hydrogen hubs around the country. And currently we are in negotiations with the DOE to get to this full award.
Thank you for that detailed look, because it brings up something that's pretty fascinating. And I'm sort of jumping ahead of the agenda that I originally wanted to stick to a bit, but you brought up something really interesting. When people think about government subsidizing a program or government provide funding, we tend to think of the applicants as an existing organization. You know, Chevron goes and gets some of this money, or in the case of the CHIPS Act, Intel goes and gets some money, Micron goes and gets some money. And these are organizations that have been around for a long, long time. But I think, as is the case with almost every hub that I've looked at, these were organizations that were formed exclusively for the purpose to submitting an application. Is that right? And if so, could you tell us a little bit about what brought these original people together and highlight some of the diversity that's there that I can see on your website?
Absolutely. So it is true, Mach2 formed a new LLC, basically, to submit the full application to the Department of Energy. And so we are an unpopulated LLC. The monies, once we do receive monies, will flow from the Department of Energy to the unpopulated LLC, and then it will flow down to the different sub-recipients. And we have 9 different sub-recipients that we've envisioned. And so the Department of Energy has agreed that they would match up to $1 billion to our 9 different sub-recipients. And so monies will be, you know, spread out, not equally, but amongst those 9 different sub-recipients. And so it is, to your point, sort of a new structure. It's not, you know, one entity in the Midwest who will receive this full $1 billion award. So a little bit different. It's also what we're working towards is actually a cooperative agreement with the Department of Energy. And so this is something that the DOE will stick with us and we with the Department of Energy through the life of this hub program. So a little bit different than, you know, a single recipient grant, but a cooperative agreement for, you know, really a 10, maybe 12 year type of time frame here.
By the way, you mentioned this unpopulated LLC receiving the funds. I'm available to populate that LLC, receive $1 billion and
sure.
Or a small fee, yeah. Make sure everybody gets their fair shake with charity, you know, beginning at home.
When the Department of Energy announced that Mach2 would receive up to, you know, $1 billion, believe me, like, we were the most popular people for a 48-hour time window until people realized the $1 billion has been fully allocated and will pass through type of situation. So,
oh, yeah. Okay. Well, forget it then. I'm out.
right. So yeah.
Give us a sense for who some of the organizations are. Who are your anchor partners? Yeah. I remember one of your team members pointed out a few to me, like 3 or so, that were particularly key when we were at the Consumer Electronics Show together.
Yep, absolutely. So we have actually 3 main hydrogen producers in our hub. And so our first hydrogen producer is Constellation Energy. And so what Constellation envisions is actually taking electrolysis, nuclear-powered electrolysis, to produce hydrogen. If you use nuclear-powered electrolysis, it's considered pink hydrogen. And so we have a pink hydrogen project by Constellation Energy. Our second production project is a combination of Invenergy and Air Liquide, and they will also do electrolysis, but the electrolyzer will be powered by renewable power, so that's green hydrogen. And so we have a green project with Invenergy and Air Liquide. And then our third main production project is with BP. BP will use natural gas with a reformation process and then capture the carbon. And so that process, it's a little different than the electrolysis process, but that's considered blue hydrogen. So we have different colors of the hydrogen rainbow, if you will. We've got pink and we've got green and we have blue. And so those are three big anchors in terms of our 9 subrecipients.
Got you. So that would be, I guess, in industry parlance, the diversity of feedstock. That is one of the Department of Energy's objectives here. In other words, they want you to make hydrogen, produce it in different ways to see what you learn from each of those paths. I understand there's also a diversity of application that they're encouraging as well. Is that something we should talk about here? Is that part of the Mach 2 initiative as well?
Absolutely, Ellie. So the Department of Energy and Mach 2 wants to be sure that we can not just produce the molecules, but of course that we have use cases, you know, good viable use cases for the clean molecules. And so there's certainly a number of industries that we're targeting. Heavy industry, in particular, the steel process. We think we can introduce clean hydrogen into that and really clean up, you know, domestic steel production. Interesting side note, 20 to 25% of domestic steel is produced actually in Northwest Indiana. So right in the center of our hydrogen hub. Concrete, glass, a couple of other heavy industries which we think would benefit from clean hydrogen. Agriculture is another sector that we're targeting. And so green ammonia, of course, there's a lot of ammonia that is produced and consumed in the Midwest. And we think that that's a good end use or application. And then, you know, I know we're on a on a mobility podcast, long haul heavy duty trucking. That's a sector which in our estimation is really difficult to electrify. Just because, of course, of the size of the battery, the weight of the battery, and the charging time, you know, currently with the constraints for a long haul, heavy duty, over the road truck. And so we think hydrogen fuel cell technology is a good use case. Another couple of mobility applications, one would be marine applications. And so instead of, the traditional diesel engine, thinking about hydrogen fuel cell for the marine industry, rail. So instead of the diesel powered locomotives, again, the hydrogen fuel cell, we think is an interesting use case. And then the last one I'll mention is aviation. And so in the short run, sustainable aviation fuel, but longer term, we do see a path to hydrogen fuel cells for airplanes, probably, you know, sort of these smaller regional, you know, types of planes. But those are some of the different use cases that we envision.
A couple things for our listeners here, and Neil, correct me if I'm wrong on anything. One is that obviously you need heat and fuel to produce that heat for all of these industrial processes that we've talked about, including the creation of hydrogen or the creation of steel or cement. But it's not just the heat that's required that creates carbon dioxide and carbon offshoots. The actual production of steel, some of the chemical agents that are required, coke, meaning coal, that's been used traditionally, that itself is a contributor to the carbon intensity of that production process.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, certainly one of the goals of Mach 2 in alignment with the administration is to, you know, continue to drive down the CO2 emissions. We do have some preliminary estimates that if, you know, our 9 projects are fully funded and we get up in operations, that we could avoid around 3.9 million metric tons of CO2 emissions per year. We're really proud of that number. And again, this is just the start, right? So as we grow these industries, as we scale, there's opportunity to continue to decarbonize some of these heavy industries, which you've highlighted.
Now, let's connect the partner discussion we had with some of these applications, both in sort of feedstock and end use. And you also mentioned that you're continuing to negotiate with the DOE. Where does that triangle stand? Are you pretty much, you have it all outlined in terms of how that billion is going to get distributed and you're negotiating the details and the requirements, the certifications, if you will, for it to count as a sort of hydrogen project, the way the DOE needs to define it? Or are you less along than that?
No, we're down the path, right? We've been in the negotiation processes, but this is a very complicated negotiation, right? Again, back to, it's actually a new program in a relatively new office in the Department of Energy. So this isn't, you know, Hydrogen Hub version 13, you know, this is Hydrogen Hub version number one inside a relatively new office. And so, you know, we're sort of figuring this out. I think the Department of Energy and OSED, who's been a great partner, is really trying to figure out, you know, again, the most effective way to make this program successful. And so, you know, we're working through the negotiation process. I don't know, you know, are we in the fourth inning, the fifth inning, you know, type of thing, but we are making good progress with the DOE and also with our project partners.
Excellent. Thank you for that. How do these collection of activities become a hub? What makes it a hub rather than a portfolio?
Sure. What I would say, the reason that it makes it a hub is that ideally our projects really intersect. And again, a portfolio would be, well, maybe you have three, four hydrogen producers, or maybe you have three or four off-takers. We have both. We have the hydrogen producers. We have the hydrogen off-takers. We actually even have, so Nicor Gas is in our portfolio. And so they're looking at, you know, constructing a couple of dedicated hydrogen pipes to move these molecules. And so it's a hub because we've connected, you know, our different projects together. And you need that really to present the whole hydrogen value chain to really make this thing work.
Let's touch on community benefits, if you don't mind, a little bit, and then I'll go back and talk a little bit about why hydrogen in the first place. But community benefit, I mean, I was really startled by how much the Department of Energy and all the materials that I've seen and you were kind enough to send me really focus on the community benefits, as well as the equitable and just distribution of the benefits. Tell us about that, please.
No, absolutely. Community benefits is of critical importance to the Department of Energy and then, of course, to MACH2. So we did an exercise and we mapped out in our region the number of disadvantaged communities and tribal areas. And we identified over 1,200 disadvantaged communities. And we estimate there's a population of 3.8 million people residing in these disadvantaged communities. And so there's a lot of disadvantaged communities. And there's a lot of residents in those communities, and we want to make their lives better, right? And so how do we make their lives better? Well, there's a couple of different ways we can do that. One is certainly to continue to push to reduce CO2, right? And so that's one of our targets, is this 3.9 million metric tons of CO2 reduction, which will translate directly into a better quality of life for residents of these communities. Another way to do that is with jobs. And so, you know, we're estimating that our hydrogen hub is going to create over 13,000 jobs, which is a really big number. Most of those admittedly are construction jobs, but there's over 1,500 permanent jobs. And these are permanent, good-paying jobs, new energy jobs, which we're really, really excited about. And so kind of reducing CO2, creating good-paying jobs. Also, not just creating the jobs, but creating training programs, you know, to equip interested parties in making this transition into new energy jobs. And so we've got a couple of different programs. We've got some money that we've allocated for wraparound services to really support, you know, local workers in terms of training, in terms of education. And then we also actually allocated a portion of monies for entrepreneurship. You know, we realize that hydrogen is sort of an emerging technology and there's a lot of entrepreneurship. And so we're targeting new startups to seed, to fund, and in particular, targeting minority women, disabled, and veteran-owned small businesses for these entrepreneurship opportunities.
Gotcha. And will those opportunities be had through distribution from MACH2, or they are, if you will, subsidiary to the efforts of the individual recipients of the funds?
Yeah. So we're working through, you know, sort of the mechanics of how that goes, but we have, you know, essentially a pool of monies that will go through our community benefits programming. So not necessarily through, you know, the subrecipients. Some subrecipients may have their own, you know, sort of entrepreneurial funding and opportunities, but this would be a kind of a separate allocation or separate pool of funds that would flow from MACH2.
Okay, so maybe there is a role for me to play, Neil, in allocating some of those funds.
Sure. Yep.
Well, that's great. That's admirable. I'm glad that's part of the program. Now, one of the interesting things about, you know, sort of stepping back and going back up to the 30,000 feet, and I'm an engineer by training.
Sure.
And so on paper, hydrogen is beautiful. You know, it's got enormous energy density. You know, you can argue about, you know, how practical, but it's got enormous energy density.
Yeah.
When you burn it, you get water.
Water. I mean, yeah.
What could be better? Practically, though,
yeah,
there are a lot of complications that come up from the fact that really the fundamental fact that hydrogen is not a source of energy, but
that's
right, at least the way we get our hands on it now, it is a store of energy.
Yeah.
In other words,
yeah,
if I extract the fossil fuel, I can burn it and it's great.
Yeah.
And it comes out of the earth, if you will, ready to burn, almost, a little bit of refining.
Sure.
But hydrogen isn't that way. We have to expend energy to unlock it from where it is stored in various molecules on earth. Some of it is stored in those fossil fuels themselves. You know, methane, I think, is CH4. So you got like four hydrogen waiting to be utilized right there. And then obviously H2O. I guess part of the question is, if you've got that clean energy to make the hydrogen, why bother with the hydrogen? Those are some of the things that the naysayers, if you will, and I don't mean it pejoratively. I mean, these are significant questions that need to be answered. Though the naysayers, those are some of the arguments. How do you view that? And how do the participants in this program view those challenges?
Yep. No, that's a great question. And so, you know, I would say there are absolutely challenges to, you know, full-scale adoption of clean hydrogen. And I would also say clean hydrogen isn't necessarily the best use in every single instance, in every, you know, every single application. I think hydrogen is a tool in the toolkit. As you said, it's an energy carrier. I wish that hydrogen existed in abundance in pure form. That's white hydrogen. I don't know how much research you've done on this, but there is some elements or some deposits of hydrogen, right? Mm-hmm. Pure form. How much of that is out there? We don't necessarily know. I will say, if there's a lot of that, then, you know, not game over type of thing, but that would just be the holy grail type of thing. I personally don't know that there's quite that much, you know, white hydrogen out there. So how do you isolate, you know, the hydrogen molecules? Then, and there's different ways to do that. You know, electrolysis is certainly a way to do that, you know, using natural gas with some sort of reformation process, with carbon capture. There's different ways. With respect to electrolysis, I'm pretty excited about the future there, because with scale, you're able to bring down the cost per kilogram per unit of green hydrogen. Scaling very large scale electrolysis projects is something that it hasn't necessarily been done before, but, you know, as part of our hub program, we're hoping to scale. And there's very large projects that are being announced really all across the country. And the Department of Energy has a hydrogen shot goal. You've probably done research on this, that they'd like to bring the price of hydrogen to $1 per 1 kilogram in one decade, right? And it's a, you know, audacious goal, very, very aggressive. Can we get there? I don't know. I certainly hope so. But I do think by really scaling, then you're bringing down the unit costs. And so, you know, yes, I think there are, you know, some challenges. We have a long ways to go. But I really see, you know, value in utilizing hydrogen, partially because, as you mentioned, you know, the energy density, again, if you burn hydrogen, the byproduct of that is water. And so because of those characteristics, I think it's important to really press forward, to lean in and really try to drive down that cost of, you know, the production of clean hydrogen, and really, you know, insert it again as a tool in the right use cases.
Are the projects that the hydrogen, that Mach 2, for example, is funding through its partners, are they mainly focused on scale being the solution, or is there sort of deep technical and research-oriented work that that's being done as well?
So it's a little bit of both, but I would say really scale is kind of the key here, right? So there's not a lot of brand new, we've never done this before, you know, type of situation. It's not necessarily an R&D grant, but really this is meant to be, you know, commercial scale and really, really expanding, you know, the volume of production, the transport and the offtake. So, yeah.
Gotcha. So just scale as a mechanism to bringing the costs down, which in itself is a salve for some of the other technical challenges that may require some money to overcome, you know, the embrittlement issue that people
That's
have,
right.
you know, et cetera. And the point that Neil brought up earlier about energy density, which I emphasized, by the way, is a really non-trivial point as far as hydrogen comes. Whatever the costs of hydrogen are, there are some applications like marine or heavy-duty transportation that we've talked about, the typical Class 8 truck that needs to have a 2,000-mile range being one of them. Yeah. You'd need 15,000 pounds of batteries. And whatever the incremental cost of hydrogen is, at least it's feasible to think about fueling that truck with hydrogen, with a hydrogen fuel cell, or most recently with actually burning the hydrogen directly. That's the issue here. We talked about in one episode, Neil, about the ACES Delta program in Utah, which is similar to, I think, Hydrogen City in Texas. And basically, you use hydrogen, as we mentioned, as a store of energy, and you can store 300 gigawatts of power. That's 100 times the size of the largest battery storage utility scale projects that have been done. So there are things you can do with hydrogen that you just can't really do otherwise.
Yep.
And they may cost more, but, and I don't mean this flippantly, but so what? We do plenty of things in this society which are not at the lowest cost because of the social cost of doing it at the lowest cost. Certainly heating up the earth to a degree that it hasn't seen in 3 million years is one of those consequences that would be quite costly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And, you know, battery technology, batteries continue to become cheaper. Over time, batteries are becoming lighter. They're going to charge faster. But there's just like laws of physics, right? That there's, you know, we're not going to get there. I don't think in my lifetime, you know, where you can have, you know, a heavy duty long haul truck that goes, you know, range of a couple thousand miles, you know, with the battery electric technology. So again, I think that in certain applications, absolutely, you know, battery electric makes all the sense in the world, but other applications is just not feasible at the moment.
So. Do you have trucking and transportation partners, or specifically the trucking thing in the hub?
So we have a number of transportation projects. And what I would say is, you know, people always talk about the chicken and the egg, right? Type of, it's very overused analogy, but we are building really as part of our hub, you know, we're building mostly the production for the molecules. We are, and we do have some funding for a series of hydrogen refueling stations, right? And so the idea is, you know, we produce this clean hydrogen, we construct several hydrogen refueling stations. And then concurrently, you know, these trucking companies, you know, are working on fuel cell technology, really working to, you know, build their order book so that they can start building, you know, dedicated hydrogen fuel cell trucks. So kind of some of our mentality is, you know, if you build it, they will come type of approach. There is some monies in our grant from the DOE-4 direct subsidies for the buy down, right, between a fuel cell truck and a diesel truck, right? Because right now, one, you can't necessarily really even get your hands on a fuel cell truck. It's more of a retrofit type of situation, but in a demo, you know, type of situation, but there's still, you know, a very wide delta between the fuel cell and the diesel. And so there is some funding to do some buy downs there.
And I guess one of the advantages of a hub concept is that whichever ideas, whichever projects tend to wind up producing hydrogen most economically or in a way that is most utilitarian, you're close enough to adjacent applications where you can basically siphon off, sort of to use a pun, almost siphon off some of that hydrogen that's being used for utility storage, for grid storage, and actually use it to fuel transportation, whereas a transportation-specific project may not have made economic sense.
That's right. Absolutely. And initially, from an offtake perspective, you know, the heavy industry, the steel, some of the others that I talked about will probably be the higher in terms of volume offtake, just because there's not a lot of fuel cell vehicles, right? But, you know, certainly as the, you know, fuel cell technology expands, as there's more and more vehicles, we certainly hope that our producers run out of capacity and they need to expand, you know, and produce more molecules and, you know, type of thing. So.
Excellent. Neil, thank you very much for this. And I should remind everyone that Mach 2 is spelled M-A-C-H-H-2, which is why you may have heard me erroneously refer to it occasionally as Mach H2, but you really just say Mach 2, right?
We do. We've got a little bit of an issue from a naming convention. So we're the Midwest Alliance for Clean Hydrogen. Coincidentally, one of the other seven winning hubs, and we're good friends with them, is the Mid-Atlantic Hydrogen Hub. Mid-Atlantic Clean Hydrogen Hub is also Mach 2. So it's a little bit confusing. There's two of the seven who sort of use that.
Okay, so this is like the original Ray's Pizza. In, that's what we're going to claim.
There you go.
Yeah, this is the original one. This is the real Mach 2, ladies and gentlemen. The other one are friends, but you know, they need to think of something else for the...
Right.
You know, I know you've got to jump and you've been very kind to us. Just very quickly, 5 years from now, 10 or 15 years from now, what do you see?
Sure. And 5 years from now, Ali, I hope that I'm confident that we'll be right in the middle of really ramping up this hydrogen hub in the Midwest. We're going to have, you know, projects, the production projects. We're going to have hydrogen, you know, refueling stations underway. We're really going to be in the thick of ramping, you know, ramping things up. 10 years from now, we may be at the tail end of the grant, but really it's just the beginning, right? So we've sort of laid the groundwork. We've laid some of the framework within 10 years. In 15 years, I mean, I really hope that we truly do expand the reach and the breadth of this hydrogen hub. And so across the country, we really have, you know, a network and you know, we're the best in the world at the production and the use of clean hydrogen.
Well, I wish you well in that objective.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Neil.
It's great to chat. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Tech, cars, machines. Subscribe here or at gtkpartners.com.